Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
Welcome to another episode of Yolitics here. Jason Whiteley with Jason Wheeler. This is fun, man. Not only do we have a guest like next to us.
Yes.
But we're also out and about. We had to put pants on today to come do this episode.
We did. Ironically, the beer that I chose is the Adios Pantalones.
It's a good beer.
You know what that means?
I asked you what it meant last time because your wealth of knowledge in Spanish is second to none.
It's goodbye pants.
It is.
But instead it really was hello pants today because I had to leave my house, get off of Zoom, and actually come see people in person and like try to sharpen my social skills again, which is really weird. How's that going? I know you're going to ask.
A little awkward pause there.
Everybody just looked at me like, really?
Still need to keep working on that one. I'm having the dim berries. I'm having the fruit beer today, which is normally your speed here. This is. From Revolver, which is in Granbury. It's a blueberry wheat beer, and we're at Toller Patio on Ross Avenue.
Yes.
Just east of the skyline in Dallas.
And it's this hidden gem.
It's awesome.
We've got trees all around us here. We're in this courtyard, tons and tons of really like brightly painted, pretty picnic tables with a bunch of umbrellas everywhere. And the best part is, we have the place totally to ourselves today. It's just us and the Southwest Airlines jets that keep going overhead. So if we get interrupted, that's why.
That and the Dallas Fire Rescue ambulances that are passing by every few minutes as well, too. Hope everyone's fine there. But let's get into our podcast here. You know, our boss told us we need to pick things up a few episodes ago. She said she needs to, you know, make sure that we really pay attention to what we're doing and not go down rabbit holes.
Can I do a quick note on that or a little rabbit hole real fast?
Yeah, go ahead, because she said that she does give you praise all the time. In fact, she BCCs me on the praise.
She's actually telling you these things now.
Yeah.
I did have to do a make good, I guess we'll call it, because I said in the last podcast, because you said something about getting a note from the boss, and I said, I don't get the bad notes, but I don't get good ones either, so it's fine. So the other day, she actually sent something really nice, and I was like, oh, that's really nice. Thank you. And then right away it's followed with, see, now you can't say that I don't send you the good notes either. And it's like, gosh, was this good or was this not good?
You got caught on the carpet on that, man.
Yeah, it was a mix.
She loves you, man. She loves you. She praises you all the time.
Oh, I'm glad she does to somebody. I'm kidding.
All right, let's get to our guest
another
today.
Email.
We have Teresa Woodard, a reporter at WFAA in Dallas with us. Teresa, while Wheeler's chowing down on the Hatch chili cheese here.
That's some good cheese. I'll go
ahead. Which is very good.
Oh yeah, gosh. I'll intro Teresa here. Don't mind us, Wheeler.
That was a small chip. I can still
talk. There's chips and queso on the table, you gotta eat.
Let's just call him my name.
It's good stuff. So Teresa, she's been on the program before. She's a reporter at WFAA in Dallas, and she just interviewed the two Democrats who are running for lieutenant governor in Texas.
Right.
This is a big deal because it's usually hard to find Democrats to fill some of these statewide roles on the ballot. But this year, or next year, actually, for the 2022 cycle, we have two Democrats who are running to replace Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick, of course, has cash. He has a record that he could run on, and he has been in there for two terms, running for his third and what he says is his final term. But let's get to Teresa. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, thanks. So you want me to talk politics? I thought you maybe were going to have me on to celebrate the Aggie victory over Alabama.
Oh, did the Aggies play over the weekend?
Whoop.
Nobody celebrates that kind of stuff.
We have an Aggie in the house.
Just had to gloat for a second.
Well, and I'm sure you're feeling extra good because you probably saw what happened in the Cotton Bowl over the weekend as well.
Yeah, maybe. We kind of cheer when the Longhorns lose, too.
That was shocking. Was it like a 100-point game between both of them?
Hope you went with the over on that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Here comes one of those planes.
Yeah, here it comes. We'll let this one pass.
A little ambiance. It's kind of nice.
Yes, well, what do you expect when you're in the flight pattern here? Our producer picks the outside patio, and the planes are 1,000 feet overhead. So, Teresa, let's get into Matthew Dowd and Mike Collier. These two are Democrats. They haven't always been Democrats, if you listen to both of them. One of them, Matthew Dowd, we know. But give us an idea for people who don't know who these men are, who may not have seen them on the ballot before, may not have watched them on TV. Who are these guys? Why are they running? And then we're going to get into all the stuff you asked them.
I think there's probably millions of Texans who are asking the same thing, because there's a lot of people who say, who's that? Maybe I've seen the name before. Maybe it rings a bell, but they probably don't know a lot about them. So that was actually the first question I asked both of them, is just, who are you? You know, both of them made the point that they are fathers. Of course, family matters to both of them. They talked about being Texans who are just tired of Texas politics. Collier talked about being proud to be a UT grad, played in the marching band. He joked that was the best thing he's ever done in his life.
And right away you judged him, didn't you?
I did. UT, right? It was all downhill from there. No, but he also talked about his business acumen and being an auditor. And he believes that he brings something to the table because of that. Matthew Dowd, of course, you know, he talked too about being a father, a Texan. But talked about how he's worked in politics. He has helped elect people that he believes are good examples of what he wants Texas to be. And he said now it's time to put his own name on the ballot.
And he's an interesting animal just because he has flipped back and forth from one party to another. And especially in this day and age, it's almost like you have a litmus test sometimes on either side. Like you're not a pure this or a pure that. Maybe some people down the middle, maybe that'll appeal to them.
I think he's really hoping to capitalize on that, on the Republicans who might be fed up and the Democrats who want someone who might be electable. That's what he's probably hoping to capitalize on. And of course, as you said, too, Mike Collier is an accountant by trade. And then Matthew Dowd, he has a history in politics. He worked for Lieutenant Governor Bob Bullock back in the 90s.
And Ann Richards.
And Governor Ann Richards as well.
Senator Lloyd Benson, the last Democratic senator for this state in Congress.
Yeah, and he's bragging on that he was around and he helped get these people elected. And of course, in 2000 is when he switched over.
Right.
Because he worked next to and alongside, he said, then Governor George W. Bush.
And he said he believed that George W. Bush was the kind of man who could bring people together and cross the aisle. And that's what we heard a lot of back in 99, for those of us who were old enough to cover those types of things back then, which I think all three of us were. But we heard a lot about that. And that was something that Matthew Dowd said he appreciated and believed. And so he was on board with George W. Bush's presidential campaign. And then he says they had a very public split after Iraq and after some sort of indications that bringing people together maybe wasn't what George W. Bush was all about in Washington, D.C. So at that point, he left the Republican Party, became an independent. People who watch ABC News have probably seen him. He's been a consultant and sort of a talking head on ABC for a number of years. And now he's running. He's running in Texas.
Yeah, he left ABC, late last year, early this year?
I believe so.
In order to, finish his book and do other things. He says he didn't know if he was going to run for office. And, of course, here he is running for office.
He said that if you would have asked him January 1st, he would have said, no way I'm running for office. After January 6th, he said, that's what I've got to do.
That was a turning point. And Collier is interesting in the sense that in this, you know, pretty heavily red state, he ran the last time against Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and did, in some circles, surprisingly well. He came within 5 points, less than 5 points of Dan Patrick in this, you know, reliably red state. So he's shown that he can get out there and get people energized, at least to that level.
Yeah, and obviously 2018, when he ran last time, was a little unusual because there was an unknown congressman from El Paso, Beto O'Rourke, who had just completely energized everyone. Of course, Collier will say that he outperformed Beto in many counties.
Rural counties.
In the rural counties, of which Beto also campaigned. He made it known that he had been to all 254 counties. The question for Collier is, can he, number one, get past the primary? And then secondly, can he do that again? Perhaps can he, you know, go further than that?
And add to it, yeah.
And add to it. Well, let's get to enough of us talking. Let's hear from some of the candidates themselves. So, Teresa, you had a whole list of questions that you asked both men. One guy you actually interviewed here at Toller Patio.
Yeah, that was Mike Collier. We sat down with him here in the same patio area right before he was having a fundraiser here in the Dallas area at this location. He had several fundraisers in the North Texas area, and actually Dowd did as well. So that's how we were able to get both of them. They were doing some of their swings through the area. But yeah, so after asking them who the heck they are, we wanted to zero in on what they believe. And so the first question was, you know, what are the two biggest problems facing Texas and how do you solve them?
Well, we absolutely have to fix the grid. There's no question about it. I had been concerned about the grid because it was designed improperly many years ago. And we all know that the state was outgrowing it, and so we were having less and less backup reserves. And we all knew that we would soon be in a situation where it couldn't keep up on a hot summer day. I didn't realize that we had a problem in the winter, too. We've been ignoring that. So we have to do two things fundamentally. Change the incentive structure so that companies invest in backup generation. We need extra generation so that we can meet the demand on a hot day in the summer. And then we have to winterize. Not just winterize the electrical gear, but we have to winterize gas production. So it seems simple. That's not hard. However, what's hard is the political will to do that, because we're talking about billions of dollars. And then finally, when we do those things, we have to make sure who pays for it. It has to be fair. And so it can't all land on consumers. It has to be shared equally by those that consume power, including the commercial and industrial users.
That's one problem. What do you think is the second biggest problem?
Well, property taxes. You can't talk about property taxes without talking about public schools, and you can't talk about public schools without talking about property taxes, because the two are inextricably linked. We do not have enough funding for our public education, but we're also paying property taxes that are too high, and it's unfair. I campaigned hard on that in 2018, and I know why the problem is. The problem is that the state is not doing its job. The state is deliberately putting the cost of education onto homeowners' backs and small businesses. We're paying more, the state is paying less, and therefore we get increasing property tax bills, but we don't see any improvement in terms of funding in education. And so there's a real lack of fairness in our tax system. And remember, I'm a CPA. I mean, I am an auditor. I get lied to for a living, so I know how these pieces fit together. And a big part of my campaign is, like, let's be honest, let's be transparent, let's make it fair. And we will, at the same time, solve the property tax problem and solve the public education funding problem.
Early on in this podcast here, we already have the line of the podcast. I get lied to for a living.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense, though.
That'd be a lot of careers.
You know what? What jumps out to me there is he is right away picking out two things that are on the minds, I think, of a lot of Texans. A lot of people haven't forgotten what happened in February, and they're certainly not going to forget about those property taxes as we head through the end of the year here. And, you know, I think that this state lucked out in that we had a mild summer.
Right.
Because that grid didn't get tested like it might normally in a really hot summer. But the question is, do we go through the winter without going through that all over again? Because, you know, there's a lot of speculation, you know, that the legislature just didn't quite do what it should have done there to protect it from happening again.
Yeah, I don't think that's speculation. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the legislature didn't do enough to physically do that. But
I don't want to go through it again.
Wait and see what happens. This next winter. What's your takeaway from that, Teresa?
Heavy policy answer, right? I mean, that is an answer that, like you said, Jason, speaks directly to. Tell me how you're going to change my life, how you're going to make my life better. And that is with property tax reform and with making sure that the lights stay on and the heat stays on and the AC stays on. Mm-hmm. So that was, to me, a very heavy policy answer. I'll tell you, I've heard Mike Collier he's been called a nerd before. I don't think he would shy away from that. Wonk, I think, is probably what he would much more appreciate.
Who called him a nerd?
A Democratic consultant. Okay. I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was actually a compliment. It wasn't a criticism.
It's a good thing to be a nerd.
Sometimes you need a little bit of nerdiness, right? You need a little wonkiness in politics instead of all the flash.
And so, do you see a difference in these two guys? We're going to hear from Matthew Dowd now. It seems like Collier took us right down into the issues.
Right down into it, and Matthew Dowd, of course, agrees that fixing the grid and property taxes is a problem. But when it came to his answer to that question, it was slightly different.
So I think the biggest overall problem is a lack of leadership and a lack of Texas values that are shared by our statewide leaders. They're not people of integrity. They don't serve the public. They're not interested in the common good. And I don't think they treat everybody with the same dignity and decency. So it's an overall lack of complete leadership on behalf of most Texans here. They only appeal to a tiny group of people that happen to vote in a Republican primary, and that's all they're interested in. And I think most Texans are ill-served by the leadership. All of that is manifests itself in many different issues. It manifests itself in a lack of fixing the electric grid, which all of us suffered through. I lost power and water for 8 days where I was from. They didn't fix the electric grid because it didn't seem like they were interested in what all Texans were going through. And then they've made an assault on rights, voting rights, a woman's right to decide over her own body, and guns, and how they've approached guns in this state. So if, to me, it's a complete lack of Texas values in Austin among the GOP. And it, again, it shows itself in how they've confronted all these issues, what they've seen, which they've seemed to have gone against the entire best interest of Texans as a whole.
So if lack of leadership is problem number one, what would you say is problem number two?
The inability to appeal to all Texans and not just a select group in the state. And so instead of only having the same people at the table, which is not diverse, both opinion and the way they look, whether it's women, people of color, they only have a select group that all believes the same exact thing, which, again, I don't think is in the interest of all Texans. So I think it's leadership, and then I think it's they have no interest in the common good.
So you can see there is some daylight between them. I mean, clearly Matthew Dowd also says the grid. I mean, he brings that up as an issue. He brings up abortion rights. He brings up guns. But he says that leadership and then not representing Texas as a whole is those are the two biggest problems.
It was interesting that he had a little less policy.
Correct.
Less of a wonk there and some more hot button issues. He talked about gun rights, voting rights.
I think that those two things still matter to Texans. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Jason, we were saying earlier that, you know, the grid and property tax reform, that's huge. That's how you're going to change my life. But when you think about what pisses you off in the state of Texas, maybe it's about leadership. Maybe it's about the fact that there are, you know, white men running the state.
And that's some of the things he mentioned is what's going to drive people
right
to the polls.
Right.
The voting issues, abortion. These are huge things that the Democrats are hoping to capitalize on right now to actually get people to the polls, whether they will be, you know, next year this time, who knows. But mm-hmm. It was interesting that he hit on that. He has the political background. He knows these things mm-hmm. because he helped, you know, Bullock and Richards and George W. Bush's 2004 reelection campaign. He gets that part of it. I thought that was interesting that he really kind of seized on some of those things that are ticking off a lot of Democratic voters right now.
Well, and we're getting thick right away into this, talking about abortion and guns, and both of those will probably both weigh heavily in 2022.
But, the question you asked, though, are what are the two biggest problems in your eyes. You didn't ask them how they would fix it, and they didn't volunteer how they would fix it.
Well, I did say, how do you solve them? And you're right.
Which is nothing against the question, but it's interesting that neither of them said, this is what I would do.
Yeah, Collier got a little bit into the fairness issue when it comes to who's going to pay for weatherizing and winterizing when it comes to the grid.
Right.
Collier got a little bit into property taxes aren't fair because the state's not paying its fair share, but Dowd did not. I think, you know, of course, I shouldn't insert myself in what I think he was saying, but the takeaway when he's criticizing leadership, I think, is him saying, if you elect me, I can fix that.
Yeah, I alone can fix it.
Yeah. not say that.
I know. And to be fair there, I've seen the billboards from Don Huffines, who is running on the right against Governor Abbott in the primary. And I've seen that billboard that says, you know, something along the lines of, get rid of property taxes. Okay, well, what can you give me a billboard of what you would replace that with, though, too?
Which is the $1 million question, because, you know,
the many millions.
Absolutely. Every city, every hospital district, every MUD, every
right.
school district, they all say we're going to lower your effective property tax rate, and they do it by a couple of cents.
Yep,
I think the city of Dallas did 20 cents, something like that.
And every several years, we keep hearing out of Austin that we're going to fix this, we're going to do better, we're going to replace this, and every year you get that bill, and it just goes up and up and
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely, they lower the effective property tax rate, but your property value goes up, and
it's
at the end of the
game.
Day, you're still paying more. But let's get into some specifics here, Teresa, because you talked to both of them. About a number of very specific issues. The first was guns.
Yeah. Well, to set the scene, we interviewed Mike Collier on Wednesday afternoon in the hours after there had been a school shooting in Mansfield ISD here in North Texas, in the city of Arlington. It was in Mansfield ISD. So that was clearly top of mind. And we interviewed Matthew Dowd about 24 hours after that. So that was a question that I think you have to ask, especially when that happens in the state. And it was the second school shooting to happen in less than a week. One happened down in Houston as well. So that's what we said. You know, how do you keep people, not just school kids, but people in general, safe from gun violence while protecting the Second Amendment?
How do you address keeping not only school kids, but the general public safe from gun violence while still respecting the Second Amendment in a state where that is so important?
Well, I think the Second Amendment's important to everybody. All the amendments are important to everybody, and they ought to be. First of all, where did that young person get that gun? Now, do we have laws so that you're responsible with your gun? I mean, owning a gun is a right. Owning a gun is also a responsibility. So how did that young person get that gun? Why did they not know that he had that gun? And there's so many other things. What's the psychological frame? There's just so many things that you'd have to do. It's not an easy problem to solve. Don't get me wrong. It's a hard problem to solve. But I ask the question, have our policymakers really done anything? I mean, they offer thoughts and prayers every time. But do they actually do anything? And so we're in a situation now where kids are worried when they go to school they're going to get shot. When I was a kid, I didn't worry about getting shot. And it just breaks my heart. And so where there's a will, there's a way. And I'm very dissatisfied with our leaders that they almost haven't done anything to solve this problem. The danger is real. But we have to respect the Second Amendment. And I do.
So what would you do?
Well, I think we need to have a background check system that works. And by the way, I get a lot of good feedback from Moms Demand Action, that you might be aware of them. It's a national organization. These are mothers who are concerned about their children in schools. They've got a very good idea as to what we should do. Background check system that works, that would be huge. Red flag laws, that would be huge. There's talk of having safes so that if you have a gun, you're responsible for that gun. Keep it in a safe. And perhaps the liability should follow the gun owner. And if that makes any sense. So if you own a gun and something terrible happens with the gun that you own, perhaps you ought to be on the hook for this. So, and then there's making sure that we understand when kids come and go. We don't want to militarize. I don't agree that you harden schools and have them walk through metal detectors. Nobody wants that. You don't want to militarize our schools. But we also, you know, maybe clear backpacks, maybe more counselors, maybe more training. There's just so many things of this nature that we need to do. More psychological help. All these things have to be done, and they have to be done, you know, well, and they have to be done in a thoughtful manner. And we're not talking about infringing on the Second Amendment when we say these things, but these things have to happen.
So to reiterate what he says there.
And that's Mike Collier, by the way. I don't think I said his name before.
That was Mike Collier, yeah. Him. He supports the Second Amendment. He said that several times. You had to press him, though, on specifics, Teresa.
Yeah, and I think... you know, you're not going to hear a lot of daylight between him and Matthew Dowd on the answer to the gun rights question. Mm-hmm. It's pretty similar.
I thought what was interesting, though, we've heard about the red flag laws,
right.
The background checks at work. These things aren't that uncommon from even Republicans.
There was a time when it felt like that was maybe going to happen in the state of Texas, and that wasn't too long ago.
After the El Paso shooting at the Walmart there, that's when Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said some things like that. He upset the NRA, and Patrick didn't care. He said that's where I stand. The liability following the gun owner, that's interesting. That would obviously require a gun owner to make sure his or her firearms are kept in a safe place and can't be accessed. But if my house gets broken into, someone takes my little safe or whatever and gets weapons.
Right.
That would, you know, it would be a cause for alarm, Jason.
So he did put some specifics out there, but kept on going back to supporting the Second Amendment as well, just to, you know, because we know that the ads, you know, will start coming out and it'll make it look like, you know, you're the biggest enemy ever to the Second Amendment, and they are running in Texas. And so there's some learning that happens there to go, okay, hey, I'm in support of Second Amendment. Here's what I want to do to be common sense.
So that was Mike Collier. Let's get to Matthew Dowd. So Teresa, you asked him the same question. It was set up the same way because we had just had that shooting in Arlington / Mansfield at the high school there. And you asked him the same question. Where does he stand? What would he do on gun rights?
So this to me is a huge issue because it goes to exactly what I'm talking about leadership and doing what's in the best interest of the common good. We've had more mass shootings in the last 10 years than we've ever had in this state. schools and Walmarts and churches and all the places that that's happened. We're at the highest point of that. We had 3,500 people last year killed by gun violence, died by gun violence in this state. And what was the Republican leadership and the man I'm running against, Dan Patrick's response to that, was make it easier for people to carry guns without a permit or a license, the permitless carry bill, instead of some common sense gun reform. I'm a gun owner. I own five guns. I have three shotguns and two rifles. So I believe in the Second Amendment. But I also believe there are basic things you can do in response to this that shows we're a state that cares about life, that cares about the safety of kids and teachers and anybody that happens to be in any public gathering. Making guns more accessible and making them without training and making them without a permit is only going to make our state more violent and more dangerous to people. And so I have three things that I would want to do. First is red flag laws. It's insane that we don't have red flag laws, which means if somebody has a gun and they're either mentally unstable or a danger to themselves or others, that somebody can report that to a judge and a judge can make a decision to temporarily remove the gun from the household to protect people. We need universal background checks with no loopholes, that everybody should have to go through a process, whether you buy a gun at a regular gun store or at a flea market or at a pawn shop or wherever. There ought to be universal gun laws in this state. And the third thing is we should roll back this permitless carry thing. Most Republicans, if you gave them truth serum, think it's outrageous that we've done this anyway. Democrats think it's outrageous. Independents think it's outrageous. And the majority of Texans, the vast majority of Texans, by 80%, support those three things. So to me, if we're going to do something and try to stop the rise of gun violence, we at least ought to try some things, and those three things I think are basic, to show and demonstrate that we're interested in the safety of people as they gather.
Some very specifics there, Teresa. He laid out three things, and one I haven't heard before, which is roll back permitless carry, which just passed in the regular legislative session.
Yeah, that was the one difference between the two, that he specifically said that. I didn't ask Mike Collier if he would do that,
right.
but Dowd is the one who volunteered that he would do that. Hmm. But, you know, I just want to say I think it was telling that he was trying to appeal to Texans by saying, hey, I'm a gun owner. I own five guns myself. I think he was trying to say, I'm not, you know, anti-gun. Well, I understand and I respect the Second Amendment and I know where we live. But he was trying to say, however, we can do a few things to try to make people safer.
It's the same thing
mind.
We just talked about with Collier there.
Right.
It's that, you know, painting as, you know, quote unquote, common sense reforms. But I believe in the Second Amendment. I actually own guns. But he that is a pretty bold thing to say that he would roll back permitless carry.
And of course, permitless carry is the law that just passed where you don't have to have any training at all in order to carry a firearm in public. And Dowd is right. There were a number of Republicans for years. The reason this didn't pass years ago is a number of Republicans, they've been in control of the state for 20 years. They did not support this on a broader scale. Finally, the groundswell, rose, and it finally got passed here in this
state. There was a whole parade of police chiefs and others in law enforcement who
all over the state
came to Austin to say, please don't do this. So that's interesting to see if, you know, maybe Dowd picks up some support in those ranks.
So just for the record here, too, both Democrats support the Second Amendment.
Yes.
And Dowd was saying he owns five guns. What's the old saying? Never tell a man
how many guns you own.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dowd just spilled
the beans.
Yeah, he spilled the beans. So you haven't heard that, Teresa? You looked at me like you never heard that before. How many guns do you have, Teresa?
Don't answer it.
I'm not going to answer that question.
Don't tell him.
All right, so these guys aren't too far apart on each other, or aren't too far apart on the issues. How are they on each other? That's where you went next.
Yeah, and this is interesting. You know, Mike Collier, I don't know that he expected to draw a primary opponent, but he did. And so clearly they're running against each other, right? And so that was the question to ask him. What do you think of Matthew Dowd? Why did you draw this opponent?
Well, I didn't. It's not the least bit surprising that I would draw a primary challenger. This is one of the most important, you know, political positions in the state, if not the country. I've been working on this, as you know, for 8 years. It was clear to me when I got started in 2013, because the state is so large and complex, it's going to take time and effort. And so I knew that when we got close, and we're now close, others would like to sail in and say, I'd like to have that job. I didn't think that it would be somebody who's mostly a Republican. I'll let him answer your questions when you talk to him. But it doesn't change anything that I'm doing. The key to success is to keep doing what I've been doing for years, which is see the whole state, and which I'm doing now, go see all of my friends, and I've got thousands of them all over the state, make new friends, talk about the issues that we face as Texans, and earn people's trust and earn their vote.
Okay, you could say in some places that them's fighting words to say that
but it was subtle.
That your Democratic challenger is quote unquote mostly a Republican. In Texas, though, that might actually help Dowd that Collier branded him that way.
Good point. Good point.
So let's take a quick break, but we have a lot more to come up, especially where Dowd stands on Collier.
While we're taking this quick break to hear from our sponsor, though, maybe, Jason, you could shift down to your left. You've got like 6 feet of picnic table there in the shade, and poor Teresa is out in the sun. Where are your manners?
She's getting a tan here. I invited her to my side of the table. My you didn't goodness. Invite her over there, man.
We're social distancing.
We'll order another round and come back with Teresa Woodard talking to Matthew Dowd and Mike Collier, the two Democrats running for lieutenant governor in the state. A race which is likely to drive out Democrats to the polls. Give them a reason to show up at the Democratic primary. Back in just a moment.
All right, and we are back just to reset here. We are at the Toller Patio in just east of the Dallas skyline. And
on Ross Avenue.
Beautiful day out here. We've got the whole courtyard to ourselves in here. I don't know what our budget is now. Did we rent out this whole place?
We did.
Or is it just that the crowd hasn't gotten here
yet?
We're
putting it on your card, too. So, yeah, we asked them how to pronounce the name of the place so we could, you know, correctly, you know, tell our listeners how to pronounce it. And he said, Toller, like the duck.
And we all went, oh, yeah. So there's
a
Toller duck.
I don't know. Maybe one of our listeners who's a hunter will know.
He said it so matter of fact that I felt like we should know even if we're not hunters. And so we all just nodded like, oh, yes, of course.
The Toller duck, yeah.
Why didn't I think of that?
I don't know.
Teresa Woodard still
it's
with us?
It's actually a dog, not a duck.
Oh, he said dog.
He started drinking at that point. Wow. We thought he said duck.
It's a Nova Scotia duck. Tolling retriever.
I'm glad that you didn't say, do you shoot those? Do
At
you
least
hunt
that's
those?
What, no. That's what the Google right. says.
Okay, so it's a dog, the Toller dog.
That
you learn something new.
Ducks.
See, this is why we need to be out of our houses and off the Zoom and in person, because we're learning stuff.
This is also why our boss says, just get to it. just stay on it. Stay on point and get to it.
Okay, so let me get to it here, so I'll get another good email from her. So we've got Teresa Woodard here with us from WFAA. Again, just to let you know, she spoke with both candidates on the Democratic side who are running for lieutenant governor next year to try to unseat incumbent Republican Dan Patrick. Just a moment ago, we heard from Mike Collier on Matthew Dowd. It's only fair that Turnabout is a fair play here, and we get to ask Dowd about Collier now. And you spoke to him specifically about the path to victory here.
Yeah, I had to ask him, clearly, to respond to his opponent calling him mostly a Republican. And, you know, the answer was that he's not necessarily running against Mike Collier. It's interesting. Take a listen.
Mike Collier ran in 2018, came relatively close. He has structure in place. So where do you see your path to victory? If he came close, didn't quite get it done, and he's building on that, what's your path to victory?
So I'm going to spend the next, I think it's now 395 days until Election Day in November, telling the truth and running against Dan Patrick. I'm not going to run against Mike Collier or anybody else that might happen to file. To me, this race isn't about Mike Collier or another Democrat. It's about what the Republicans have done in the legislature. And I'm going to go on the trail, which I've already been. Came from San Antonio the other day, was in Waco, in Dallas, Fort Worth, going to go to East Texas, West Texas, the border, South Texas. And I'm just going to show Texans and Texas Democrats what are my values are, and it's going to be up to them to make that decision that who's the best candidate to go against Dan Patrick and who can win. I think I've demonstrated in my history I have ability to win races, and voters are just going to have to ask themselves and decide who they want, who shares their values, but who can win in November.
You said you're not going to run against Mike Collier. Mike Collier is running against you. Yesterday, when I spoke with him, he said he called you mostly a Republican. How do you respond to that?
So, I mean, it's a one again. One, I'm not going to run against Mike Collier in this race at all. But I would just like Mike Collier should look at his own history. I left the Republican Party way before Mike Collier ever left the Republican Party. He's a much more newer person to this process than I am to this process. I elected the last Democratic lieutenant governor and the last Democratic governor. The last time Texas Democrats held power in the state, I was intimately involved in it and won. And so he's going to just have to ask himself, is it in his best interest, in the interest of Texas Democrats, to run against me? Or is it our goal to beat Dan Patrick? My goal is to beat Dan Patrick. I said from the beginning, I'm not going to run a negative campaign or attack Mike Collier. I'm going to stick to that for every day. I'm not going to spend a dollar running against Mike Collier or attacking Mike Collier. To me, this race is about Dan Patrick.
He's not going to spend a dollar running against Mike Collier. I can't imagine that.
It always starts out that way. Yeah. You know, we're going to keep a real clean campaign. We're not going to go dirty, blah, blah, blah. And by the time it's all said and done, the gloves are off and there's lots of mud being slung there. I am curious to see, though, if that holds true, that will be a fascinating dynamic.
Agreed.
In this election. Put a pin in this one, because if they can manage, these two candidates, to not just go all out war on each other and instead to focus on their common enemy, Dan Patrick, boy, think about how different that might look. You know, we might have a really messy primary for the governor's race here in Texas. And you wonder, might that turn off some voters if you have really messy in that race? And then you see this lieutenant governor's race where, you know, things are, you know, pretty gentlemanly, as it were, in politics.
But I lost track of how many times he said he's not running against Mike Collier. He made sure that that answer was in was said multiple times.
But as you said, Mike Collier is running against him. And as soon as Matthew Dowd announced he was running for lieutenant governor about 10 days ago, Collier came out within an hour or so and sent out a press release just going after him, asking whether Texas Democrats were really like a Republican, a former Republican, etc. So Collier's on the attack. Collier knows there could be a threat here. At the end of the day, it's all about cash. Who has enough cash to get their message out, to establish their name, their own name ID? And you did ask a little bit about that. Did either of them say how much money they need to run in this race? Did they give you specifics at all?
They did not give specifics, but they did specifically say they don't need to match Dan Patrick, because they said people know who he is. Any money we spend is about trying to get him out of office. So Dan Patrick has name recognition. They don't need to match his fundraising. They need to spend money attacking Dan Patrick.
And one of the things you asked Matthew Dowd there just a moment ago was about him being a Republican for 7 years. I want to skip ahead to this topic here. So Matthew Dowd spent from 2000 to 2007 working for former Governor George W. Bush, then President George W. Bush in the White House before they had that split, as you mentioned earlier.
And helped get him elected is important to note, too.
He essentially ran the 2004 reelection campaign in which Bush defeated John Kerry. But why did he change parties? And that's something you wanted to know.
Absolutely.
You were a Democrat in the 90s, a Republican in the early 2000s. You're running now as a Democrat again. There may be some Democrats out there who are skeptical of who you are. So explain how you can make this switch.
So it's all about my values. And in the 90s, when I worked for Bullock and Ann Richards, which I call myself a Ann Richards, Bob Bullock Democrat, is who I am. I got to know then Governor Bush and watched how he worked across the aisle with a Democratic lieutenant governor, a Democratic speaker. I thought we could do the same thing when he asked me to work for him for president, which is the first time I had worked for a Republican. We could do the same thing in a very dysfunctional Washington. It didn't turn out that way. I had a very public break with President Bush over the war and the fact that the country was more divided. I became an independent at that point, was out of the politics in that way, in partisanship way. But I think over the aftermath of the last 5 years, but especially January 6th and the insurrection at the Capitol, and then what the Texas GOP legislature and statewide officials have done, I've come to the conclusion that the only vehicle that exists today with the two main political parties to sort of save democracy and reinvigorate the Constitution is through the Democratic Party right now. I don't think that exists today in the Republican Party. I think we benefit by having two vibrant, enlightened political parties. That doesn't exist today. So in my view, the only path to the promised land of having a state that pays attention to the Constitution and the rights of everyone and works in the common good is the Democratic Party, and that's why I'm running.
I think that's an interesting answer.
Yeah.
It's kind of owning what he's done, and it's basically saying, you know, January 6th woke me up and I said, if I want to make a change, I've got to put my name in the ring.
And it's explaining further out when your opponent is saying that you're mostly a Republican. It's explaining really where you've been on the spectrum.
And I will say neither of these candidates, based on the questions and answers that we experienced with them, neither of these are progressive Democrats.
Right.
Very moderate, very down the road. And I think that Matthew Dowd is trying to say, hey, yes, I've had an R behind my name before, but I'm a Democrat because I believe in A, B, and C.
Yeah, and absolutely. Texas Democrats aren't as progressive as Democrats in other parts of the country, obviously because of where they live.
Well, you know, and I thought it's interesting. He's done this several times now, Dowd has, where he is not afraid to name drop and talk about the big name Democrats he was responsible for helping in this state back when this state used to elect some statewide Democrats. So it's interesting that he keeps going back to that experience. But of course, Mike Collier has his own bucket of experience to draw from. And that is what we alluded to earlier, where in 2018, I thought he got maybe uncomfortably close as far as Dan Patrick is concerned. Anyway.
I've heard reports that Dan Patrick on election night was uncomfortable, most definitely, by how close it was. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, that was one thing we did want to know from Mike Collier is what went right. What went wrong? What lessons did you learn? What would you change going forward?
I now know the difference between, the importance of having a very, very robust, skilled, professional campaign operation. So when I ran in 2018, it was not a robust campaign operation. And I didn't really realize until it was over. And I thought, well, if I had just had more support, more technical support, more funding, et cetera. I served as President Biden, then Vice President Biden, senior advisor for his campaign in Texas, where I saw a world-class campaign operation up and running. And not only that, but I met many of the folks that worked on that campaign, all of whom, or many of whom, have come across to help me. It's a big, complicated state. It's hard to get your message out. You're competing against so many other concerns, and it takes a very sophisticated campaign operation to do that. This time, I have that.
He has it this time, but it's going to be fascinating to see whether he can do anything with that this time.
And he did make the point that some of the people who worked on President Biden's campaign have joined his staff. Hmm. And also he said some people who have worked for AOC when it comes to making ads and things like that have joined his staff as well. So he is trying to say we're more organized.
But so much of it is driven by the top of the ticket. And so I think that we've waited purposely all the way to the very end here because we're sure to get an email about that. The boss likes when we get right to it as well. But I decided we should savor it and wait to ask the question that everybody's been asking. Who is going to step up on the Democratic side in Texas and put their name out there for governor? We think we know who it is, but it hasn't happened yet. And every time it seems like we ask someone, who do you prefer to run? They just sort of, you know, sidestep and I don't know, and let's just see where it goes and this and that. You asked both of these candidates this.
And this is an important question to ask because this person could really drive the turnout. You know, the lieutenant governor is usually the second. It's not usually. The lieutenant governor is the second person on the ballot. The main person on the ballot is the governor. Mike Collier, a lot of people think he did so well in 2018 because Beto O'Rourke was up top. So the question is, who do you want to see run for governor? And Teresa, that's something you asked him.
So Beto and I are friends. Beto O'Rourke, the fellow from El Paso, perhaps you've heard of him.
I've heard.
We campaigned together in 2018, in a manner of speaking. I mean, the governor and lieutenant governor are very different constitutional officers. It's not like, you know, in federal, it's not like the president and then the other president, the backup president. The two are very different jobs. But I know Beto well. I think Democrats love Beto. And I'd like to see him run for governor. I don't know if he's going to or not. You'll have to ask Beto that. But I think for Democrats that are listening, I always hasten to point out that I got more votes than he did in two-thirds of the counties in the state. I did very well in rural Texas. He did very well in urban Texas. And so if we work together and compare notes, both of us have statewide campaign experience. It takes a long time to learn how to do this and build your own infrastructure and your network. So I'd really like to run with him, but I don't know who he's going to run.
That was Mike Collier.
That was Mike Collier.
You know, I believe that they're actually friends now, because only with a true friend can you talk about, you know, say I'm great friends with so-and-so and then talk about how you outperformed them in different places.
I know. What is Beto going to say when he hears that?
It depends on if they're really friends.
Say, relax, guy, okay? You got closed into 4% here because of me. So I don't know, but that's interesting.
And you know what? There's not a lot of, I keep saying this word, but there's not a lot of daylight between Mike Collier and Matthew Dowd on this answer.
Well, Beto is a friend of mine. I've known Beto a long time. I've known Beto since he was on the city council. He's going to make a decision that whether or not he's going to get in the race. I hope he does, because I think he has a voice in this process that I think would be very strong and very beneficial for the whole ticket. So that's another race the Democratic Party will sort out. But I'm a friend of his. I think he's done great work on a lot of different things, on voting rights. He did great work during the electric grid failure. In bringing people together to help solve the problem. So I think I hope he gets in. And I look forward, if I'm the nominee and he's the nominee, of running together.
Everybody's friends with Beto.
Everybody.
Everyone's friends with Beto.
At least everybody wants to say they're friends with Beto.
And my takeaway is no one mentioned anybody else.
You're right.
Exactly.
What happened to Matthew McConaughey, people were talking about a few months ago? He made a headline the other day on something. I think he weighed in on some issue.
He finally weighed in on Senate Bill 8, I believe.
Everyone's talking about Beto, which tells me if I'm a betting man, I'm putting some cash on Beto.
Yeah, because you're right. It was all the rage. McConaughey several months ago. And since then, we haven't heard much. And lately, the name that we've been hearing the most is Beto. But generally, it's been people telling us that off the record. Like, right. They're not really wanting to go out there and put skin in the game and say it. Both of these candidates are doing that.
Yeah, and you know, another name we'd heard for a while was Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo.
Right.
People had mentioned Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins.
I haven't been hearing those now, though.
You haven't heard them. But both of these guys, who are already running for the number two spot, say that they would like to see their good buddy,
yeah,
their best friend, their BFF, Beto O'Rourke.
We're like family, yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, I did ask them, why lieutenant governor? Why not just run for governor? And both of them made the point that the lieutenant governor in Texas is powerful. Mm-hmm. And some would make the argument it is more powerful than the governor, because they set the agenda. Mm-hmm. And so they both said they understand the power of the office. That is why they want to be in that seat. You know, again, I don't know that we heard tons of differences between the two. We did talk to them about abortion rights in the state. They both agreed they want for things to look like Roe versus Wade again. They'd like to see SB 8 off the table, mm-hmm, and not be enforced. But you can hear. I mean, there are subtle differences between them, but both just want change in Texas.
It is interesting that you make the point, though, about that office and the power that it holds here in this state. I think maybe some people aren't aware of that. We didn't pay attention in that seventh grade Texas history class, right? Maybe. But it is, I've heard that many times, that it's actually a more powerful office than the governor of the state.
I have a feeling Greg Abbott would not appreciate hearing that.
Well, but the fact
but it
of
is,
the matter
it is an
is,
argument that people make.
You do. You run, you know, sort of the legislative agenda, which means that Dan Patrick has a lot to run on. He has a record to run on because of that, but he also has a record that makes him vulnerable, and that's why this race is so important every time, because this person is somebody who really pulls a lot of levers in Austin.
And you say he sets the legislative agenda. He decides what gets to the floor in the Senate, and even if the House passes something, if the Senate doesn't, it's not going anywhere. And a lot of people thought, if the lieutenant governor hears this, he'd probably take issue with me. But a lot of people thought for a long time, didn't think, we saw this for several years, that one reason that permitless carry didn't get passed in previous sessions, mm-hmm, obviously passed this session, was the fact that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was against that, mm-hmm, in previous sessions. Tide changed. Lieutenant Governor's on board with it now. He got it passed in there as well, too. But of course, anybody who wants to take on Dan Patrick or any other Republican incumbent in the state has to have cash. And neither person, neither Matthew Dowd nor Mike Collier, would say how much they think they need to raise to run against Patrick. But I thought it was interesting. One thing Collier told you, he says he doesn't have to keep up with Dan Patrick dollar for dollar. His spending, Collier said, talking about Patrick, his spending won't change how people feel about him.
And I think, you know, that's a good point. Dan Patrick has been lieutenant governor in the state of Texas. You've formed an opinion about Dan Patrick at this point, most likely. And frankly, people all over the nation have formed an opinion about Dan Patrick, most likely. So it's true. His spending isn't going to influence a lot of voters. The spending that Mike Collier and Matthew Dowd do, maybe that can.
This race at the end of the day, this race more than probably anything else is likely to draw people out for the Democratic primary. Mm-hmm. Not maybe not as much for the general election, but for the Democratic primary, this is a competitive race that's likely to get people to show up at the polls.
Which is kind of odd to have a Democratic primary in Texas that actually gets people going. We don't see that a lot.
Exactly. That's why it's so unusual. That's why I'm glad you asked these questions, Teresa.
It was interesting. I appreciated the opportunity to be able to speak with them this early in the race, because I think some people may say, hey, it's too early. The election is a long ways away, but let's start figuring out policy-wise where these people stand and hold them accountable as we get closer to the election and see if they waver on anything, if they change.
Yeah, and the Democratic primary, for the record, is not that far away. We're, what, 5-6 months out, depending on whenever redistricting gets done. So it's not that far off. So this
campaigns never end, do they?
It never ends.
The ads can't be far away.
You guys can come advertise on Yolitics if you want to. It's Jay Wheeler at... All right, I'm done with my dim berries. How did you like the pantalones?
I liked it. I liked the Adios Pantalones, and I figured I would, just from the name.
It is good
name.
Beer. I was going to have it, but I had it once before on the program. And so
my motto
this.
In life.
Teresa's on her third pint right now, so we probably need to let her go.
Yeah.
Let her lay down
I gotta
here
get my Uber. I got to get my Uber home.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to Yolitics. Always appreciate it. If remember, too, don't forget, we have a phone number.
We do.
Call us and leave us a message. We'll use it on the podcast.
I'm going to
prank
call you guys.
We decide what goes on the podcast. Our phone number, 214-977-6020. 214-977-6020. Teresa, you're welcome on the program or our voicemail anytime. So
slide into your VMs.
Slide into our VMs anytime you want. Good deal. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it. And thanks to Toller Patio. Toller. Like the duck
like
dog.
The dog.
Like the duck dog.
It's
not
just
the,
like the not dog. The duck. Not the duck.
Thanks to Toller no such thing. For having us as well.